time to step into the sin bin. This is Penalty Box Radio.
Three-time best sports blog winner.
With Justin Bradford.
Two-time toast of Music City best sports reporter.
And Glenn Blackwell. Brought to you by E610 Athletes. It's time to talk all things hockey in the Music City. Penalty Box Radio is on. Smashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
Welcome to Penalty Box Radio, powered by E610 Athletes. Justin Bradford, Glenn Blackwell, producer Buck behind the glass. And hey, it's another week of hockey talk. And I'm just glad to be here, Glenn. I can't hear you, Glenn.
I'm on.
There you are. I can hear you, Glenn.
Buck, I think that Buck is purposely muting me because he thought I was going to have like
a bad dad joke.
Yeah.
I'm just preparing for the inevitable.
Oh. He's making sure that mute button works for tonight.
Oh, gosh. The mute, like on Twitter, I love the mute button.
The mute button saves godsend. Twitter.
It does
save
Twitter.
All of us can stay on Twitter as long as we do.
Just remember, Twitter is a free site.
It is free.
It is a free site. So
solid content.
Always solid content. A great show tonight. We have the leading point getter for the Milwaukee Admirals, Matt Donovan, defenseman. He recently signed with the Nashville Predators because he was just with Milwaukee. He'll be on the next segment. Then after that, Hannah Stewart of The Score to talk all things NHL prospects. And then we have a few fun games planned for the final segment. It's called the Dumpster Fire Game. And we're going to have some fun with that.
Love the dumpster fire game.
Stay tuned for that one because there are some teams that are in dumpster fire mode and we're going to say why. But let's start off with the Nashville Predators. They fell to the Colorado Avalanche, but it was interesting last night, Glenn, that the speed game. Okay, let's scale it back. The crowd seemed a little different last night to me. Maybe it was a Tuesday night. Everybody's like, it's cold, Bradford. That's why. It's just really cold outside. I'm like, is the cold really taken away from everybody's enthusiasm in the arena? I don't know what it was. It just maybe people were on edge a little bit or a little scared of Colorado because Colorado's the young upstart team right now, and they proved it last night with the way they performed against Nashville.
I think that, yeah, I think that people can get a little bit, you know, nervous because you think, okay, this used to be a team where people would say, okay, this is the Preds game. Like, this is, there's no doubt.
11 in a row in the regular season.
Exactly. And then you see, you know, power play goals from Nathan MacKinnon that are just mind-blowing, and you're like, okay, sitting a little further on the edge of my seat now, you know, and it's cold. But it's just, I think that people do get a little bit nervous, but the good thing about what everybody got to see last night was it was not a lack of effort on the Predators' part.
No.
This was a very fun game to watch, and it was high energy, it was high pace, and I don't know. I mean, as a person that gets cold very easy, that's not an excuse. Because I was still engaged, so. But it was super exciting to watch, and those are the kind of games that you want. You know,
obviously,
the Predators fans want it to go the other way, but still it was high energy and high pace. And that's what you want to see.
And like you said, not lack of effort, 20 shots by the Predators in the third period, 20 shots.
Yeah.
Not every shot's going to be a high danger opportunity, but they're peppering Semyon Varlamov with shots and trying to make things happen. They just couldn't.
Yeah.
And then it really seemed like it was Nashville versus Nathan MacKinnon.
Yeah.
Because did you know, Glenn, that Nathan MacKinnon is good at hockey?
Nathan MacKinnon is good at hockey, and that was verified last night at Bridgestone Arena.
Verified.
And I mean, the shots that he put past Pecorine, that second goal his was, I watched it on repeat today a few times because I'm like, how did this happen so quick? I mean, it literally just, it was mind-blowing. But the thing is, too, is that in some ways, I mean, I know we talked about the Boston Bruins. It was a few weeks ago.
Oh, yeah.
We talked about their top line, and I was like, yeah, it's one of the best in the league now. Yeah, and then now you're looking at this, and consistently this top line is dominating. Can a top line dominate all season and pull a team through? I don't know. But right now, it's really working.
It really is. 37 points for Nathan MacKinnon in 24 games. Obviously, it was going to be a tough battle against him, but it's a special teams game. Peter Laviolette even said it last night. Special teams decided the game. And why did they? Because the Avalanche scored two power play goals. The Predators had three power play opportunities and did not score on any of them. Now, I will say there was at least one of those power play opportunities that looked pretty good. Pretty good opportunities, but they couldn't muster anything. But still, there's a lot of things struggling on the power play. And this is where we're going to kind of segue into, because the power play, I know it seems like every week we discuss it, but I'm seeing flashes of things we're supposed to do right, which is getting to the slot, getting shots from the home area, which is obviously a high danger area, right in front of the net, right to the side of the net, areas where you have most likelihood to score. I still do not understand the whole concept of, let's get it to the point, generate a shot, and let's see if a rebound happens. When, if you have more space in the ice because there are less people out there for the opposition, you plug someone to hang around the center area between the faceoff dots, and you try to feed him the puck to get one-timers away because somebody's going to get off. You pass the puck around in the best way possible, finding the right passing lanes. Eventually, someone's going to get open. That's the whole point of the power play, is because you have an extra man out there.
To
so
play.
Someone's going to be open. Someone should be open to not having to rely on the point shot. Yeah, sometimes an opportunity for a point shot, they're going to give you that lane to shoot. And yes, you'll generate a rebound so you can pop it right in. Obviously, that's not happening at the percentage that you want it to. We are over a quarter of the way into the season. I know everybody's saying, just wait, just wait. We were saying, just wait, just wait. I was saying, just wait, be patient, be patient.
Mm-hmm.
You're a quarter of the way through the season now. The time for patience is over. Fix it.
And you played a game against a team who shows that special teams is key. That won this game.
They make the difference in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Special teams can make or break an entire playoff series. You got to fix it. Because this team is not going to consistently score 5-on-5 like they have been throughout an entire season, especially in the playoffs, because what are teams going to do when it comes to playoff time? They're going to watch all the game tape, all the film, everything on how to prepare for the Predators, and then they're just going to take penalties.
They're going to That's exactly the case.
Because you could have a team like Arizona, maybe the Predators finish, 1-2-3. Or one of those areas to where they end up facing a wildcard team like what Arizona could be, who leads the league in shorthanded goals.
Yeah,
and they're just going to be like, we'll take as many penalties as you want. We'll score on you. You've got to fix the power play. And I know it's beating a dead horse, but you beat it because where do the Nashville Predators rank in the power play right now? I mean, I'm sure out there you know it's in the bottom, but currently they're tied with the Los Angeles Kings. The Los Angeles Kings, which are their own dumpster fire, at 14.7% for third to last in the league.
Yeah. The Los Angeles Kings.
Yeah. Yes. You fix the power play and you boost that up just 6%. You should be getting at least 20% in the power play. That right there could be an extra 6 points in terms of the games that they've lost, because they've lost some close games. And obviously, they're so very much into the Colorado game last night. They could have won that. They could have tied it. They had so many great opportunities. It was a very good game, like you already said.
Yeah.
But special teams made that difference. And it's not necessarily blaming the penalty kill, because you had Nathan MacKinnon out there.
Yeah.
You blame the power play for not producing at least one goal, because one goal would have tied the game.
Exactly. Yeah. And aside from, you know, thinking like, oh, that will be 6 points at the end of the regular season, when you just think about the playoffs in general, when other teams know how to capitalize on a power play, that could cost you game six of the Stanley Cup final. It's just, it's something that, like you said, it's beating a dead horse. Everybody's repeating it over and over because it is crucial. And this team has got to figure
that
out.
And if we're ignoring it, then no word's going to reach to the team to where there's feel like there's a little pressure. There's a lot. I think there's some stubbornness going on. Obviously a change needs to be made, and you see it sometimes where players are gravitating to the right spot. They're setting up a screen in the slot. There's a player that's kind of gravitating towards it, and then they all shift back. It's like, is something getting corrected here? Do they don't want you to do that? I'm not trying to put on the tinfoil hat here. I'm just saying, fix the dang thing.
Yeah, that's all we're saying.
Fix the power play.
It really is that simple.
It's so simple. It's so simple. But you know, in reality, Glenn, I don't want to say it's simple, but it's one of those things that you can make a switch in the strategy.
Try it out. Yeah.
That's what you're supposed to adjust.
Yep.
You have to adjust in today's NHL, because other teams are going to adjust for you.
Mm-hmm.
And so far, when you see other teams adjusting for the Predators, they do a bang up job of shutting them down.
Yeah. And that's usually what the first of the season is for, is to make those adjustments, try things out, because you don't want to be trying things out come February, March.
Especially with injuries, too.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead and try some things out, because you have to make do now without Victor Arvidsson, without PK Subban, without Kyle Turris.
Yeah.
So obviously other players are getting opportunities there. Don't push them into the same type of thing that every other player has. Try them out. Austin Watson playing on the power play, it worked.
It works, yeah.
And he was doing different things as well. Kyle Yarncroak. Mm-hmm. Okay, keep trying different things. See what happens. Okay, on to some interesting news. The Buffalo Sabres, we have to go to break. I want to talk about Buffalo.
Okay, let's talk about him.
10-game win streak for the Buffalo Sabres. Number one in the league.
Yeah.
Number one.
Where did this come from?
The Buffalo Sabres? Phil Housley, former assistant coach for the Nashville Predators, really doing something special there in Buffalo. And with how big of a hockey town they are, I mean, the Buffalo market, even when the Sabres aren't in it, which is almost all the time now, when they're not in the playoffs, they're consistently in the top three in terms of markets watching the playoffs. They deserve it. They deserve to have something to cheer for.
Yeah,
and they finally made some right moves because you look at their roster. Jeff Skinner has been such a huge, huge addition to that team. Jeff Skinner, predator killer whenever they play the Carolina Hurricanes. But Jack Eichel, Jason Pominville, some of the young guys are finally stepping up as well for Rasmus Dahlin. So it's great to see Buffalo putting that together. But 10 in a row, that's pretty impressive.
I know. I need to go back on anything I said at the beginning of the season when I picked all my teams. Because I wasn't planning on this one.
But good for Buffalo. And it's interesting to see, too, some of the teams that are struggling. One of those teams that's struggling, Pittsburgh's been a little bit wishy-washy. They're 20th in the league right now, 25 points. But we're still so early in the season when it comes to point spread that a one win streak or one losing streak could really make a huge difference. Because you look at it, Nashville, 35 points. Colorado's in their tail at 32, but Nashville being at 35 points, and then you look at all the way to number, let's see, Winnipeg number 12 in the league at 28 points. 2-3 games can make
changes
a huge difference in all
absolutely,
this, and we'll see
yeah.
that. But again, it's early in the season when it comes to standings, but it's already getting to the meat of the season when it comes to fixing your special teams. Okay. All right.
Just do it.
Okay. Up next, we're going to talk more about the Predators organization. We're going to take a plane over to Milwaukee. We're going to talk to Matt Donovan. He's a defenseman and the leading point getter for the Milwaukee Admirals. Up next, Penalty Box Radio, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Hey, this is Roman Yossi. You're listening to Nashville's best sports talk, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
And welcome back to Penalty Box Radio, powered by E610 Athletes, Justin Bradford, Glenn Blackwell, producer Buck behind the glass. And now, we're going to talk some Milwaukee Admirals. We have defenseman Matt Donovan on the line with us right now. Matt, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So, first of all, Milwaukee Admirals leading the Central Division, having a great season so far, and under new head coach and everything, too. And you came over from Sweden to play in the AHL again, to play with Milwaukee, and recently signed a contract with the Nashville Predators organization. It's been kind of a whirlwind of a season for you so far. Just what has it been like to kind of prove yourself and get that contract with the Nashville Predators to be a part of the organization?
Yeah, it started this summer when I signed a one-way AHL deal with Milwaukee, and it was kind of just an understanding with Nashville, saying if I played the way I could and played well, that I had a chance to sign a two-way with Nashville, and I was lucky enough to do it pretty early. We had a good start here in Milwaukee, and things are going the right way. So yeah, I was lucky enough to do that, get that two-way contract pretty early.
And Matt, like Justin mentioned, the Admirals leading the AHL Central Division, second in the league. But Coach Taylor recently in an interview mentioned, as far as production is concerned, that you're ahead of the curve. So I kind of wanted to just touch on, where has your mental focus been right now, just on your own personal development on the ice?
Yeah, coaches have been really good this year at kind of giving us free range and letting us play the way we want to play the game. And obviously they put in systems to help us along the way, but they've kind of let the ropes loose a little bit on us, and especially me, just kind of producing offensively and jumping up into the play when I can. And the coaches wanted us to be kind of that offensive production on the back end, just like in Nashville. Those guys have obviously a really good decor there, and a lot of those guys are offensive defensemen, so I think they kind of wanted to tie into that and have some offensive defensemen down here and have us jump into the play as much as possible. So yeah, I've been lucky enough to put some pucks in the net so far, and hopefully we can keep it going.
No, absolutely. And again, Matt Donovan, the Milwaukee Admirals, joining us right now. And Matt, the last three games all going to overtime shootout. Is that kind of exciting, stressful? What's that like on you? You guys get all three wins, and that's obviously what's most important. But in those three games, and obviously showing how exciting the hockey is there with Milwaukee, but what's that feeling been like to have those last three games go to a shootout like that?
Yeah, I think everyone on our team kind of wants it to win in regulation. We've been going overtime too much, so a win in regulation is a lot better than going to overtime. But yeah, we've been lucky enough to go into overtime and the shootouts, like you said, and winning those shootouts. We've got some good guys that are really good at shootouts, and like I said, we've been lucky enough to pull those ones out.
No, absolutely. Now, let's take a step back in your career. You've had quite the career. I mean, you've represented Team USA at the World Championships and World Juniors. You play in the AHL, the NHL, and recently before Milwaukee, you played over in the Swedish Hockey League. Just what was that experience like playing over in Europe for you with Frölunda?
It was awesome. Not many people in hockey can say they played overseas lived in a different country and got to travel Europe and see different countries. So it was a great experience. Sweden, the country's beautiful. Everyone's really nice. Everyone speaks English really well. So it was pretty easy going over there and playing. The hockey's not too different, but obviously the ice is a little bigger, so there's a little more skating. But the coaches were great. The organization was great that I played for, and so overall it was a great experience.
And I'm going to take it back a little bit further. On this show, we often talk about the importance of the evolution of the game in areas that are not quite traditional. And in your case, growing up in Oklahoma, not even being home to an NHL team, what was that like for you as far as learning and growing within that sport in that area?
It was different. My dad ran a rink since I was born and still runs a rink in Oklahoma. So I was lucky enough to have him help me along the way and have him run the rink and me be able to get on the ice whenever I wanted. So that definitely helped. But yeah, there's not a lot of hockey there. So I kind of just went to the rink because I loved it. And I was able to get on the ice whenever I could, like I said, and just loved playing the game. And I was lucky enough to move on to better teams. I had to move to Dallas when I was 16 and then Cedar Rapids to play in the USHL when I was 17. So yeah, I had to leave pretty early, but a lot of kids nowadays have to do that. So it wasn't too different, I guess, but obviously a lot different because I'm from Oklahoma.
No, it was still very exciting just to see how successful a player can be coming from those areas, because that's what we love here. We love seeing success stories come from the quote-unquote non-traditional areas. So Matt, looking to in the past as well, you were able to represent your country, able to represent Team USA two opportunities with the World Championship and World Juniors. Just what is that feeling like when you know you're able to represent your country while playing the sport that you love?
It's unbelievable. I have some family that have been in the military and they're big, and my grandfather was a lieutenant colonel in the Marines. So I always grew up with a lot of national pride and just being able to put on those colors and represent a country, it's an unbelievable feeling. There's nothing like it.
Now, I can only imagine that. And so back to the Admirals, jumping there, because you're one of the older guys on the team, being 28 there and playing with a lot of other prospects and everything too that are part of the organization. What's that like to be one of those veterans on a team to where obviously you've had a lot of experience playing this game all over the world too? Just how does that help you being one of those leaders in the team because of your background?
Yeah, it's weird being one of the older guys at 28. Like, I hate saying that I'm one of the older guys because I'm only 28. But yeah, we do have a young team, and yeah, it's weird thinking that I've been playing pro for 8 years. So yeah, just experience of playing in this league, playing in the NHL, and then playing in other countries as well. It's just experience helps so much. And I just try and pass my experiences along to the younger guys. Obviously, we have a young team here. So, yeah, just you learn something new every day. And the biggest thing is learning how to be a pro and learning how to come to the rink and work hard every day and try and get better every day on the ice.
All right, and inquiring minds want to know, all the Twitter people want to know, I want to get the backstory on Squatch Hockey. Is this a Sasquatch fascination? Where did this come from? I want to know the story behind it.
My friends and I have always been fascinated in it. And, I think it ties into Oklahoma a little bit, just 'cause there's a lot of Sasquatch sightings in Southeast Oklahoma. And, I just kind of ran with it. I liked it and ran with it. So, yeah, it's kind of come a long ways.
So have you yourself ever had a Sasquatch sighting, or is it only just kind of in rumors that from what you've heard?
I have not, right. But it's weird that people see my Twitter name and my Squatch Hockey Co. company, and they'll come up to me and tell me their encounters. So I've definitely heard a lot of stories now.
I can only imagine what you've heard, Matt. Well, Matt, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. You're doing great things up there in Milwaukee. I know everybody's excited to have you as part of the Predators organization because you're working your butt off, and it's obviously proven itself right there with getting that contract and the leading point getter right now for the Milwaukee Admirals. So thank you so much, and future success with the team.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
All right, folks, Matt Donovan, defenseman with the Milwaukee Admirals, obviously doing great things. He leads the Milwaukee Admirals in points right now, 16 points, a defenseman. And yeah. Right behind him is Frederick Allard, another defenseman at 15 points. So the defense is activating Milwaukee just like you kind of expect it to with Nashville.
Exactly. And we didn't get to touch on this with him, but SquatchHockeyCo.com, what he had just mentioned, their mission is to inspire youth hockey players to work hard and dream big. They sell gear. So it's a whole thing. So visit that site, SquatchHockeyCo.com.
Oh, that's awesome.
We didn't get to touch on that because, you know, there's a lot to talk about with him.
There is a lot to talk about, and that's our fault for not bringing it up. So
well, then Sasquatch.
We apologize, Matt.
Yeah, but.
But Carl Taylor, obviously doing good things up there. Back-to-back-to-back shootouts, but they get wins.
Yeah.
And you think of all the different things with a team has to go through, and they're having those shootouts. They have to go to overtime. There's been some games where they've been outscored, but then they've really outscored other teams. These ups and downs are teaching a lot of those young players how to deal with so many different situations of being a pro. I really like what's going on in Milwaukee right now, Glenn.
And that's all that you can want for that team. And like he said, he's trying to provide that leadership as well for the younger players. But that's all that you can want is that up and down experience. You obviously want the win to come out of it, but learning comes from that. So
absolutely.
That's all that you can want, especially for future Preds players. So,
all right. Up next, we're going to talk a lot about NHL prospects with Hannah Stewart of The Score. Also, a little bit of women's hockey action as well. It's all up next. Penalty Box Radio, ESPN 102.5 The Game. And welcome back to Penalty Box Radio, powered by E610 Athletes. Justin Bradford, Glenn Blackwell, producer Buck behind the glass, spitting those tunes. And now we're going to switch over to talking NHL prospects. She is fantastic at what she does. So much about prospects and figure skating, too. Because if you follow her on Twitter, she knows when it comes to ice sports, she knows everything.
I have a lot to learn from you,
Hannah.
Yes,
it's Hannah Stewart of The Score. Hannah, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So we get to see you every once in a while up here in Nashville when it comes to prospect stuff, prospect tournaments and development camps and everything like that. Let's go ahead and start off with what got you into watching prospects for hockey?
The lockout in 2012, because there was no other hockey and NHL Network was showing a lot of the CHL games, and I had paid attention to them before, but not to the extent that I started doing so that season, and then the Oilers screwed up with a bunch of their prospects and it made me mad, so I decided to learn about it.
Okay, and Hannah, we have to touch on this because it's not something that you've written a piece on, but you mentioned recently on Twitter, your actual tweet read, "Someone pay me to write 1 million words on every single prospect I think is being mishandled by their organization and why." So I'm not going to ask you for every single one, but now you've got us all curious and I want to know one or two, maybe, if you want to toss this out on a radio show and tell us who you think is being mishandled by the organization.
Sure. Because there is one for every team, pretty much, mm-hmm. at some point in that team's history, probably in that team's recent history. One that I've been looking at a lot lately is Daniel Sprong in Pittsburgh. And on the one hand, he hasn't done himself any favors. I've heard around that he's got a bad attitude about some things, and he hasn't really had any offensive consistency in his chances this year. But if you look at kind of how he was bounced around, you know, his first season when Mike Johnston was still there, they kept him up for about half the season. I think he only played 18 games, but, you know, he was there, you know, approaching the kind of the midseason mark. And then he went back to juniors and didn't really, you know, sniff the NHL again for a while. And it's that pattern, guys getting, you know, kind of yanked around and back and forth, because I think consistency is so important. when you're developing prospects and getting guys consistent runs of games.
Absolutely. And I know, also according to Twitter, I know that you're headed up to BC, BU game in Boston this weekend. Obviously, there's plenty of talent to see there, especially with the likes of players like David Cotton. What are some of the prospects that you're looking forward to seeing the most when you go up there?
I love guys like Joel Farabee and David Ferentz. They've always been some of my favorites. And then Oliver Wahlstrom at BC. So those are a few that I am particularly looking at, especially with the discussion lately about, you know, is Wahlstrom leaving Boston College because we saw a USHL team, you know, pick him up or trade for his rights, or it's not quite the same in the USHL as it is in the major junior leagues, but it's pretty much the equivalent. So it started the discussion, you know, is he leaving BC? It doesn't look like he is, but I'm going to be keeping a closer eye on kind of how he's playing for that reason. And he's just an exciting player to watch. So,
no, it makes total sense. So, again, Hannah Stewart with the score. Talking NHL prospects, another one that you're going to get a look at is Dante Fabbro up there as well. And so, obviously, a lot of the talk in Nashville is, will he sign? Will he not? What's going on there? But obviously, the focus is on winning a national championship. And so, just when you look at the likes of Dante Fabbro in terms of defensive prospects for the NHL, just where does he kind of fit in amongst all the other NHL prospects for defense and what you see?
You know, it's hard to compare across leagues because the NCAA is so different from the major junior style, but I really do think Fabbro is one of the better defensive prospects outside the NHL right now. And I'd love to see him get, you know, some AHL time, see how he stacks up against the guys who are still, you know, in the AHL to get a sense of what his pro style is going to look like. But I really do think that Nashville's got a gem in Fabbro.
Yeah, if they're able to get him to sign, right?
Right, that's the key.
So
it helps.
You recently just let out an article about Dylan Strome, and he was involved in that trade between Arizona and Chicago, and he has an opportunity now with Chicago, a team that's really struggling to kind of make a name for himself, and got to see him when he was in Erie, where he lit it up, really lit it up, especially with Alex DeBrincat there with the Erie Otters back from 2014, 2016 is when he really put up a lot of those points, well over 100 points, and never really got to cut it with Arizona, and we saw that a lot of times where he's getting some opportunities but really couldn't shake it, and he gets a goal with the Blackhawks. So what are you seeing out of Dylan Strome? What is this opportunity for him? Because it's important for obviously Preds fans to know here in Nashville, because he's playing for the opposition now, playing for a rival. And so it's important to know some of the prospects on these other teams.
Yeah, you're definitely going to be seeing a lot of him, especially if he stays in that 2C spot. And Strome is actually another one of those players that I was thinking of when I was discussing, you know, prospects being mishandled. because Strome, his biggest knock is his skating. But I will say when I watched him Tuesday night in Chicago, he did not look like a liability in terms of his skating. Now, we'll see if he can keep that up, but marrying better skating with this incredible offensive skill he's got such great vision on the ice. And, you know, he can really create when he's got the right setting. You know, his AHL numbers show that. But he was playing with, you know, guys in Arizona. He was mostly playing with guys who are kind of the grit and grind fourth line type. And young skill players just don't really succeed in that kind of a role or shine like they're used to. So with Strome, I feel like he would have benefited from seeing AHL time earlier to kind of get used to the pro game, the pro pace. Because, I mean, his last season in Erie, he played 35 games and had 75 points. What do you learn from that other than, like, oh, I can score lots of points, and that's awesome, and I can help my team win games. But, you know, specific skill-wise, what do you learn from that?
No, absolutely. You're just kind of doing the motions there and getting a lot of points. So now let's look ahead now to the 2019 draft. And Jack Hughes obviously continues to be ranked in the number one spot. So looking at the standings as they are now, obviously this can fluctuate. You have Los Angeles, St. Louis, Philadelphia, New Jersey, Arizona, but there's still really a long way to go in terms of what this could happen here. What team do you think, this is a loaded question too, and a duh, what team do you think you'd fit the best in terms of the position that these teams are in to really help them for the future?
Oh, that's a really good question.
Yeah.
Obviously Vancouver really could use someone like Jack Hughes. They've been doing better than we expected, but I expect the bottom to drop out at any moment. LA could really, really use a player like Jack Hughes because their style for so long has been, you know, based on these older players who, you know, so most of whom are still good, but are not really up to the way the style of play in the NHL is moving, which is that faster, you know, puck moving game. So it would be interesting to see if LA got Jack Hughes, would they shift that team identity? Would that be, you know, that shifting factor?
Oh, would be interesting. So, again, Hannah Stewart with the Score, talking to NHL prospects. We're going to change gears here before I have to let you go, Hannah, to the NWHL. So, you know, you recently moved away from the South, and we miss you in the South. But the NWHL All-Star Game is coming to Nashville in February, and it's obviously a big deal. And from your perspective, too, what does this mean for the NWHL All-Star Game to come to Nashville? What it means for the sport? And just how big is it for hockey in the South, a place that, you know, you've experienced hockey in the South here, too, and just how big it is for an event like this?
Well, on the NWHL side, getting that exposure in a hockey market as incredible as Nashville is going to be just awesome. You know, you think back to the people you saw at, you know, a development camp game this summer. That same kind of audience is probably going to come out for the NWHL game, which is fantastic. But, you know, then I think about all of these little girls who, you know, are watching hockey, and most of the hockey they've seen are, you know, is these grown men playing. And now they're going to get to see people who look like them, who, you know, give them this idea that, oh, I can definitely do this at a pro level now because that option is there. And just thinking back, like, if I had seen that as a little kid, you know, my exposure to women's hockey was the Olympics, and that was it growing up because we didn't have, you know, college teams or anything like that around. So, you know, I grew up thinking, oh, if a girl wants to play hockey, she has to play with the boys. That's not the case anymore.
And that's just really exciting. So, We're very excited for it here in Nashville. We're excited to see what it does for the game, and I know there's so many people excited to see this happen at Bridgestone Arena and the skills competition at Ford Ice Center. And Hannah, thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate your insight and NHL prospects in the game of women's hockey.
Thanks for having me. It's fun.
Absolutely. Folks, Hannah Stewart, you can follow her on Twitter, Hockey with Hannah. Excellent analysis on NHL prospects because she dives right into it and dives into the game. And I probably should have asked her a little bit on some of the other ice sports as well, but we kind of ran out of time, Glenn.
I know, that's the theme of the night. It happens, but
it is. All right, up next, we're going to play the dumpster fire game with NHL teams and then answer all those Twitter questions that you submitted. Up next, Penalty Box Radio, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back to Penalty Box Radio, powered by E610 Athletes. Justin Bradford, Glenn Blackwell, producer Buck behind the glass. And Glenn's over here dancing. If you can't see her, but obviously she's grooving.
I was
right
like
now.
Turntabling to this song. I don't know. It's not really a turntable song, but.
Oh, boy.
If I had time for the Loser Game Show sound for actions, I would do it, but I don't.
Hey, Buck, how about them Titans?
Tighten up, baby.
All right. So, Glenn, let's play a little game.
Okay.
Let's play a little game here.
What game do you want to play, Justin?
Let's play the dumpster fire game.
Oh, okay. This will be fun.
Hey, Glenn, how much of a dumpster fire is St. Louis?
I don't know, Justin. How much of a dumpster fire is St. Louis?
They're losing to Detroit.
Oh, wow. That's a dumpster fire.
And they fired their head coach in waiting, who they got rid of Ken Hitchcock for, to make Mike Yeo the head coach, who was the head coach for the Minnesota Wild. And they fired him because they kept getting shut out. That's a dumpster fire. I don't care if they beat Nashville or not once. That is a dumpster fire. Oh,
trash.
Did you know that they have not won a game in the Stanley Cup final at all? Did you know that? They've been three times, and they've been swept every time.
Mm.
Boom, boom, ba-doom. Okay. Hey, Glenn.
Yeah, Justin?
How much of a dumpster fire is Chicago?
I don't know. How much of a dumpster fire is Chicago?
Well, not only did they get beat 8-3 by Vegas last night.
Oof.
For this month, the month of November, Chicago has been outscored 43-24.
Woof.
43-24. Oh, that's
that
awful.
Hurts.
That's awful. You remember when they were good?
I do remember. It's been a while, though.
You remember how many bad contracts that Chicago has?
And you remember when everybody said that's going to catch up to you one day?
Uh-huh. You remember
that?
Remember when it wasn't Joel Quenneville's fault that the team was awful.
And then remember when they fired him because they thought it was, but then they just continued to be terrible.
And do you remember when he went out and party with Chicago Bears fans?
Do you remember when he's
tailgated?
Just living his best life with the Bears fans?
Living his best Q life with the mustache.
Everybody's like, what is he going to do now? And he's like, I'm living my best life. I don't care.
Shots.
He's having a blast. Shots are what I'm going to do.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. This is, it's something awful. It's something.
Yeah, that's terrible.
Oh man. So yeah. We're gonna go the dumpster fire game, folks. If you have
That's
other
such
dumpster
a great
fires,
game.
I mean, the LA's a dumpster fire, but we knew that
but
going.
But we touched on that with the Los Angeles Kings.
You're so funny. Okay, Glenn, let's go ahead and get to this. We have a question from Liva Lori G. Liv B in Nashville. What's the weirdest food you've ever had in an arena?
What is what is yours? I don't even know what mine would be.
Okay, we went on an OHL trip a few years ago, went to go see Erie with mm-hmm. Connor McDavid, Dylan Strome, mm-hmm. all those cats up there, but went to Peterborough for an OHL game. Peterborough, the home of Mike Fisher. Mm-hmm. Peterborough Pete's up there, though, where Mike Fisher did not play. But they served, for the media, they served curry.
Okay.
I'm not calling curry weird. It's because it's made by the Boosters and everything there. It's a local hometown thing. It is like the South, but in the North. So it was very interesting there in Peterborough, but they served curry. And I loved it. It was awesome. It was just unique. I never would have imagined that in a junior hockey arena
that's
I'd have curry.
That's what you would get served. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was mine.
Yeah, I don't even know. I haven't had any strange food in an arena. Well, like something that's weird.
You need to step outside the box.
I know. Maybe bit. I need to like broaden my horizons.
Yeah. All right.
My
we
palate.
Do have a caller on the line.
Oh.
So we have Steve wanting to talk about the Preds defense. Steve, welcome to the show.
Hey, really enjoy the show.
Thank you.
I was at the game last night, and I want to know who do we need to put on the ice every time Nathan MacKinnon gets on there? I want him stopped. I want him stopped dead cold. No more goals.
I wanted
to jump on the ice last night, stopping myself, but it's just.
Well, that would have been dangerous because you're not a catfish.
This is true.
No, Steve, last night showed where this team's really missing PK Subban. And it's because, granted how the eye tests a lot of times, people think that Subban turns the puck over a lot. He does a really good job of shutting down top offensive players from other teams. And it's because of his speed, his finesse, his stick work, that kind of ability. And Dan Hamhuis, nothing against him. He just did not have the speed to keep up with Nathan MacKinnon when he was out there. Matias Ekholm did a fairly good job as well. Nathan MacKinnon just shows why he's one of those generational talents. So I think if you're going to match up somebody, Roman Josi is going to be out there, Ryan Ellis, but you can't always have that right matchup. But it really showed why PK Subban was missed in last night's game, because that top four is just a little off when you're missing the speed that PK Subban provides on the back end in terms of back checking.
Okay, cool. Really enjoyed the show. Thanks.
Absolutely, Steve. Appreciate you calling in. Yeah, so PK Subban, it shows you, if you look at the numbers, you really look at the numbers, they are missing him.
They are missing him for sure. And then there's going to be times like McKinnon, like I mentioned earlier, McKinnon's second goal, when it's down low inside the far post. Like, there are some shots that you're just like, they're going to go through everybody and they're going to get right past Pecorine.
He's that good. So speaking of that, we did have another question. Catfish Jake asked this, is the MacKinnon line the best in hockey? Right now, yep. So why are they the best in hockey? Well, Nathan MacKinnon has 37 points. Mikko Rantanen has 40 points. 40 points for Mikko Rantanen in 28 games. 37 points in 24 games for Nathan MacKinnon. And then Gabriel Landeskog, 25th in the league right now. He has 26 points in 24 games. So every single player on Nathan MacKinnon's line is more than a point per game player right now.
Yep.
They're good.
They are good. And when you break it down, that line has played more 5-on-5 ice time than any other line in the league by a long shot.
So they're going to score.
So they have that chemistry. They've put in that time together. Eventually, when you spend that much time with a line and you gain that chemistry, you're going to score and you're going to be productive. So, yeah, right now, they're the best in the league.
And I don't want anybody to accuse us of, they are talking about the Colorado Avalanche and how good they are. Folks, when a team's good like that, this is a team that the Predators could be facing in the playoffs again.
Yep.
And you have to know your enemy.
You do. You have to know your enemy.
And you could tell last year in the playoffs as well that Colorado, they're on the upstart and they're still on that way where they're going to have lapses. They're still young. They have a lot of young players in terms of depth and everything as well. Right now, that first line's leading them. The Predators overall have more depth when they're healthy.
They do.
When they're healthy, the Predators have overall more depth. But they're missing three top players right now. One on the blue line, your second line center, and a top six forward.
Yeah.
That's detrimental. And so when you think about it, too, for the Predators to have that good of a game as well against Colorado, that's a very good sign, because if they can make the right adjustments as well for the long haul and when they meet again or in the playoffs, things like that, that's what you want to see. You don't want to always have to rely on your top line, which earlier in the season the Predators were. Now you're seeing guys like Austin Watson, see he's been back. Mm-hmm. See Colton Sisson's chipping in every little bit. Cal Yarncrow getting the hat trick. You want that depth to score, because you cannot always rely on Philip Forsgren, Ryan Johansson, yep, or Victor Arvidsson.
And that's what could be, you know, a negative in the long term with Colorado, because right now that first line is carrying that team. So
yeah,
how long can that last? That's the good thing about the Predator situation, is that they're not in that place where they're depending on that first line. So
just get through these injuries, which is not necessarily a silver lining anymore, but it's a mm-hmm. good test of your character and a test of your skill to see what the depth guys can do. And it's giving lots of guys opportunities to do well. And the fourth line actually did really well. I know we had an article come out on penaltyboxradio.com talking about the advanced analytics, and the fourth line did a very good job when they were on the ice of not allowing high danger opportunities and producing some themselves. So I really like Rocco Grimaldi out there. He's a little firecracker out there on the ice. I really like Rocco Grimaldi's game because his speed, his tenacity, and he just is always skating. His feet are always moving. Now they have to, because mm-hmm. he's a little short.
Yeah,
but his feet always have
to
be moving.
A lot of speed,
but that's
in
what
those
you
short
want
ones, yeah,
out of a hockey player. Your feet have to always be moving, mm-hmm. and Rocco Grimaldi's that type of player. And I know they miss him in Milwaukee whenever he's gone, because you could see it based on their record of how much they missed Rocco Grimaldi
when he was
called up to Nashville. So good opportunity for him. And Rocco Grimaldi played against his former team. He was with the Avalanche organization the past couple of seasons as well. All right, next question. This comes from Canuck for Liberty. Is last night the start of Fiala's resurgence for the rest of the season? And I would pump the brakes a little on resurgence, mm-hmm. but it's a good, good sign. And the reason why I say it's a good sign, yeah, he got one goal. But Kevin Fiala was doing a lot of good things with the puck. Let's go back a few games to where he got benched in the third period when he made an awful, awful play and just didn't even try for the puck coming from Roman Josi, and he got benched. I mean, he played two shifts at the end of the second, and including the third period, which was, that's how bad it was.
That's when you're putting the doghouse.
that's the Barry Trotz doghouse, yep, right there. You're sitting at the end of the bench and you just wait your turn, which is never going to come. But it's a good sign, because he was doing the right things. He's always moving. His feet were moving. He was doing the right things with the puck. He was going to the right places on the ice. That's what you want to see. And there's a huge discussion all the time about Kevin Fiala and on Facebook about, is he overrated? Do you need to trade him now? What do you need to do with Fiala? Look, he's still young. I'm not saying to give him every opportunity, because right now they are giving him every opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're a little bit patient, and maybe it'll click. Is the chemistry there right now? No, it's not. He still has a lot of potential and a lot of talent to continue to be a 20-goal scorer consistently if he continues to do the right things and puts the work in. You don't want to see any laziness coming out
yeah.
of him.
Yeah.
That's what you saw a little bit with Pontus Oberg, and that's what the coaches even said, some laziness.
And that's
now,
where the, yeah.
Now he's putting the work in with the Ducks.
When you see the frustration start to come out as laziness, when they get so frustrated that they're not producing, mm-hmm. that they just get so fed up and they're just kind of, they're just done.
They just quit.
So, but yeah. I wouldn't say that he's like on the road to this crazy breakout, but it's a step in the right direction. It's better than it was when yes. you're seeing the right plays being made. You're scoring a goal. We're on the right, you know, we're on the right track.
And even when he was on the fourth line, he was doing a lot of the right things well on the fourth line. And that's what you want to see, is a player that, even though he's been bumped down and he knows he's been bumped down, it's not like we're just going to spread out the talent. It was a, dude, you're bumped down to the fourth line. You're going to play fourth line minutes.
Earn your way back
up.
Yeah,
earn your way back up and work hard. He was doing the right things. Okay, last question. It's from Liv B. I've seen complaints on Twitter that our depth is overrated because we lost to the Ducks. I don't. We only lost by one goal to the top line in the league without core players. Do you think our depth is overrated?
I would say no, because, I mean, you see, like we had just mentioned, you see the game against Colorado where, you know, you are missing some of your three of your key players, and yet you did not win the game, but you played a very solid game against that team. So I think that the depth is proving that it is there, and it's benefiting the team. So I wouldn't say that it's overrated.
No, I wouldn't say it's overrated. I would almost say it almost needs more.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because this team still needs another top six winger.
Mm-hmm.
A power forward. That's what I believe. That's mm-hmm. my take, is that they need another big dude that has some speed and can score, and also a little bit physical, which those definitely don't grow on trees, because those you just kind of have to see and develop there. Mm-hmm. They don't just pop up out of nowhere. That's what Wayne Simmons would be fun if that would ever happen. but what I like about the depth right now is that they're finally picking it up, because they have to. When other players go cold, you have to have other players pick up the pace. Same thing when there's injuries, other players need to pick up the pace. Is it saying the Predators' depth is really good? Yeah, they have good depth as long as they're performing. Could it always be better? It absolutely could always be better. You can always improve your depth, and you see that in the playoffs so much. And that's why David Poile has made the moves that he's made in the previous few years, is to give this team center depth. That's what you saw bringing in Kyle Turris, because they needed to have more depth there, making moves everywhere to give them more depth with the organization, because they've had to trade away so many picks that it's getting a little dry, and they've had some signings they've had to make too to fill up the cupboard back in Milwaukee too. So depth is a gray area. They have depth right now in the NHL team, but still a little dry when it comes to the AHL side and the other prospects in the system, because you just don't know what's going to happen with those guys. So, yeah. Glenn?
You nailed it, JB.
Oh, thanks.
Like you always do.
Oh, thanks. All right, folks. Exciting news as well. You can listen to it on PenaltyBoxRadio.com. Emma Knoll, she plays with the Hendersonville Commandos. She goes to Station Camp High School, part of the Hendersonville Co-op team. High school hockey here in Nashville. She committed to King's College in Pennsylvania. So exciting to have a women's hockey player from the Nashville area commit and is going to play NCAA college hockey. So congratulations to Emma Knoll. Really proud of you here. You can hear that interview that I had with her on PenaltyBoxRadio.com. So Glenn, thank you.
Thank you, Justin.
Producer Buck, thank you very much. Thank you to our guests.
As always.
You can find more information at PenaltyBoxRadio.com. Lots of post-game stories, audio, video, everything like that. This is Justin Bradford. Thanks for listening to Penalty Box Radio here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.